Welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler.
And I'm Michael Hanley. Today, we speak with the Forum's Managing Director of Communications, Adrian Monk. He clears up some misconceptions on what the World Economic Forum is and what it does.
You will also find out more about our One Year, One Change campaign, and we hear from Sharon Burrow, General Secretary of the International Trade Union Confederation, ITUC, for our What If scenario. She discusses unemployment.
Managing Director of Communications. He clears up some misconceptions people may have about the World Economic Forum.
Well, I think when people think about the World Economic Forum, I think some people think that we're the World Capitalist Forum. You know, and so they look at us and they think, hang on, this is an institution that's about big business, it's about capital. And actually, for 40 years, it's not been about that, really. It's been about getting business together with civil society, together with academia, together with experts in faith, culture, you name it, and bringing them together for sort of mutual decision making. It's never been about capitalism pure and simple, if you like. And so I think people are always surprised when Klaus, who's championed this idea of business as part of a bigger global society, comes out and says we need to look beyond capitalism, because really he's always believed that. He's always argued that it's not enough just to look at kind of balance sheets and say, well, I've ticked my boxes on profit and loss and I've done what I need to do.
Do you think maybe it's the title World Economic Forum that creates this misconception?
I think it's more the case that over the years people have reacted to the history and the development of the meeting, and I think they've missed what's happened with the organisation since it's changed, which is to say, it was a small gathering when it began back in the early 1970s, but it's always had a radical edge to it. I mean, in the 70s, Klaus was bringing in liberation theologists from Latin America to meet business leaders. In the 80s, he was bringing in trade union leaders like Arthur Scargill, who ran the National Union of Mine Workers in the UK. So it's always been his ambition to take conversation beyond just business and beyond capitalism. I think what's happened in the last 3 years is that we've reached an understanding globally that the free market system that we thought had defaulted had become the kind of normality of after communism, which was the big kind of break in the last quarter century, the collapse of communism as a system, that somehow free market capitalism was fine and it just needed to keep going along. And I think we've seen with the global financial crisis that isn't enough, and he's just recognizing that. And I think he's always been on the kind of front end of pushing this idea that business especially needs to look beyond its balance sheet responsibilities. And this article, I think, has caught people's attention because they don't expect it from him.
How can we change the perception of the World Economic Forum to let people know what actually we do and what we actually are?
Well, this is obviously my failing as head of comms, is that, people probably do have the wrong idea about the forum. But I think inevitably we're a platform, so when we bring people together, we don't want the story to be about us. We don't want the forum to be at the center of everything. We want the forum to sit in the background and to allow people to have conversations that they otherwise couldn't have, and to have, and to meet with people who they might disagree with in circumstances where they can have a meaningful interaction and not just a kind of slangy match or public argument. And to some extent, I think there's a need for people to kind of acknowledge something that we all as individuals find very hard to acknowledge, which is we're all very results driven. We're very hard on ourselves and our organizations, and we always want to know, what did this achieve? You look back on my career, what have I achieved? What can I put my name to? What did I do? And we have the same kind of standard for organizations, but actually life is slower, more complicated, and richer than that. And to some extent, you know, the richness of the global economy is not a richness that goes down to money, gross national product, gross, you know, GDP. It's a richness that, you know, as Bobby Kennedy said back in the 60s, goes to every aspect of our lives. And I think that richness, intellectual, cultural, social, and others, is part of what the World Economic Forum is, because it's part of what the global economy is. And I think now we're at a stage where Klaus is helping that process of reimagining what life after capitalism is, to make sure that as an economy, as a world economy, we take into account many, many more factors about people's well-being than simply the, you know, return on capital, return on investment, because there's more to life than that, and there's more to society and global society than that.
Before the annual meeting in Davos, I spoke with Klaus, and he said that it should be the World Humanitarian Forum. Do you think that's maybe a better label for us?
I think you know, everyone knows who we are, and perhaps everyone doesn't know what we are, and maybe they don't need to know in the sort of detail that for those of us who work in the organisation is necessary. But I do think if we can play a small part in changing people's perceptions of what is important economically, that will make a difference. And if you look at some of our work, you know, not just in competitiveness, but for example in gender, we've related gender issues to economic development in a very powerful way. And you know, the forum's been at the forefront of calling for more action to be taken to integrate women into the global economy, into jobs, into senior roles. And our reports every year bolster that case, and our rankings every year make that case to governments and businesses and all kinds of different sectors in society. So we are changing people's understanding, I think, drip by drip, of what the world economy means and what the world economic part of our title means. But it's a very slow process, and we're a very small part of that process too, because we're just a fraction of the global conversation about what the economy is and what the global economic outlook is.
Sharon Bureau, General Secretary of the International Trade Union, explains why unemployment is an underappreciated risk.
You now have 210 million people out of work. That's the highest on record. But you have millions more, particularly women and young people, not on the statisticians' books. And then you have 45 million young people every year seeking to enter labour markets that can't accommodate them. Over 10 years, if we don't construct 620 million jobs or so, we are not going to accommodate the demands of people for not just job security, but income security, a capacity to support their families and so on. So the world's lost sight of what was a primary ambition, which was full employment, however nations define that, having people, more than a couple of percentage of people unemployed, is just, you know, now a real crisis in terms of social tension, political risk, and general economic instability. If you don't have jobs, if you don't have income from both work and indeed social protection for some, then you don't have the demand base. You don't have the consumption base that drives demand, sustainable demand, so you can get the growth that's necessary to make sure the global economy is sustainable. This is simply ignored, has been ignored for far too long. We've had jobless growth now for a couple of decades. We've had the lowest share of productivity in terms of wages for up to 3 to 4 decades, depending on the countries in the US since about the 50s. And in fact, that has meant that debt fuel consumption has filled that space of real income share. Inequities growing. That was already an emerging crisis before the global financial crisis. And now, of course, with the second wave of the global financial crisis, you have to say that inaction around employment, inaction around social protection, has in fact fueled the crisis or the huge risk that the world faces going forward. What if governments continue to ignore the unemployment crisis? The results of that is that the risk not just to social tension, not just to survivability, but indeed to our democratic way of life, is serious. Nobody wins from ignoring the unemployment crisis. Families don't win because they have children who aren't employed, or they have older workers who have lost their jobs and can't find new jobs. Governments don't win because the social tensions on the streets now in Greece and Spain and Israel, and of course the revolutions in the Middle East, demonstrate what happens when you actually have people without security. And the world doesn't win because not only don't we have safe neighbourhoods as people find alternative means of surviving, but in fact it risks democracy. At worst, there are civil and indeed global war scenarios that come from having 45, 50, 60, 70% of people in the younger generations without hope, without employment. For older workers, the desperation of not being able to care for your family, or indeed older parents, in many societies, particularly with ageing populations, is just a scenario that's too desperate to think about. So we must have action on employment. We must have action on social protection. If we don't, the risks to our way of life are hugely significant. Every politician acknowledges that it's an issue when they're pushed. And of course, in the context of the global financial crisis, the Obama jobs plan gives people hope. It's the right approach in theory, but no national leader can solve this on their own. This requires coordinated global strategy where it is seen to be possible to tackle the issues. So it doesn't require just sharing best practice, although that's part of it. It requires acting on that best practice. It will look different in different countries. But unless we see a sense of urgency around employment from the G20 nations in Cannes, unless we look towards Rio Plus 20 in May next year and see governments accept that sustainability requires, of course, tackling issues around the environment, of course, tackling issues around financial viability, but most of all, tackling the very issues of poverty, of inequity, of unemployment, and that means jobs growth and indeed social protection.
And joining me now is Head of Social Media, Georgie Pilcher. And Georgie is going to tell us a little bit about the One Year, One Change campaign on Africa. And this is going to be taking place before the African Summit in Addis Ababa, which is kicking off in 3 weeks, I believe.
That's right. We're launching the One Year, One Change campaign next week, which is asking you guys to submit a change you want to see in your Africa in the next 12 months. For the first time, the World Economic Forum is traveling to Ethiopia to bring together the voices of Africa. So we want to hear from you what you want changed in your region. Do you want better access to clean water? Do you want interest-free student loans? What do you want to see? Go to wef.ch/1y1c and submit your change.
And so once the people have put in their requests for change, what happens with them?
So we're going to take those changes to Ethiopia and display them at the social media corner, where more than 500 participants, including presidents, heads of government, regional experts and business leaders, will come and address your change. How are they working to transform your change into reality?
So it's really the voice of the people it's access to the leaders.
Exactly. It is us taking their visions to people who will create the action to make things happen. So visit wef.ch/1y1c and post your change. Also, like us on Facebook at wef.ch/Facebook to follow the campaign and watch the participants respond to your visions and your changes.
That's it for this week's program. I'm Michelle Mishler.